My college career pretty much sums up the changes of the late 60s. There was a panty raid in the dorms when I was a freshman. By the summer of my senior year, the so-called New Year's Gang had planted a bomb on the University of Wisconsin campus, killing Robert Fasnacht, a promising young researcher who was working late that night. By the time that explosion occurred, I'd joined protest marches, I'd thought long and hard about service, and I had applied for status as a conscientious objector. When I got my CO status, I did my required alternative service working as a psychiatric aide. Searching for answers about that time, I turned to two friends, Robert Cardineau and Mark Peterson. They were both COs who worked with me at the Yale Psychiatric Institute. And we sat down to talk about the war, about the draft, and about what it meant to choose to refuse. And, as Robert says, about the lottery.
My number was 76, so I didn't have long.
I was 74, same thing.
Oh, really? Wow.
Everybody knew what their friends' numbers were and what your status was and what was going to happen to you.
Yeah. Do you remember listening to that? I listened to it on the radio. They gave one birth date after another. It was so weird. Birth date after birth date after birth date came up, and all of a sudden, you know, each one you'd say, not me. But I still think, maybe I'm just saying this from a distance, but that wasn't what made me decide to apply to be a CO.
Well, I was slowly forced into a corner. First, I had a college deferment. Then I had another years of a college deferment because I got my master's in teaching at Oberlin. And then suddenly I was out of deferments. Then I tried to get a medical deferment because I did have a ruined foot from a motorcycle accident.
But you had a beautiful gait.
Right, that's what the doctor said. He told me I had a beautiful gait and I was fine. So then I actually did get my 1A. It was then that I decided, well, there's just no way I'm going.
Yeah. I remember going through a long period of disillusionment with the idea of the war in Vietnam. The idea of actually committing some violent act, just kind of out of the question.
I remember talking to all sorts of people. Some of them, you know, they ate too much, so they were too heavy for the Army to take them. And I still remember one guy who lost so much weight his pants fell off.
Everybody had their plot.
Yeah.
The conscience part, I've always felt like a slightly off base. You know, part of the common sense idea of conscience is that the conscience is telling you to do something for the greater good that runs against self-interest. And I never felt like being a conscientious objector ran against my own self-interest in any way.
I felt I was protecting something, actually.
Yes.
It was standing up for a line which I just felt I couldn't cross, period.
So I'm curious how you, it was a personal decision for each of you, was for me anyway, a personal decision, but I remember talking it over with friends. I remember going to the American Friends Service Committee and reading about others who'd applied for COs.
Well, my grandmother was a Quaker, and she probably would have patted me on the back. But I didn't discuss it with her, and my parents were overseas.
So you were really on your own.
So I was completely on my own and completely free.
I had long exchanges with my parents. My mom didn't say much. I think she was sort of in support. But my dad wrote me letters about how I had an obligation to the country, and that makes me laugh now, how some discipline would be good for me.
Wow.
Well, we know that's true.
That I just, for the first time in 40 years, I looked through the files I've kept from applying for this.
Oh, you're a braver man than I am.
I was astonished. I want to go back and hug all these people who wrote me letters.
Oh, isn't that nice? You know, I hadn't thought about the letters, Jim. That's very interesting. You have to make the statement about why you're a conscientious objector. And I wanted to be exact and truthful in the statement. I really wanted to not say anything that would sort of get me off the hook accidentally. That wasn't what I believed. And after I wrote it, I drove back from Indiana to Oberlin and to give it to my favorite philosophy professor to, like, certify. It wasn't so important that it was legally going to get me off, but I wanted to make sure that it, philosophically it was accurate.
It's like wanting to be real.
Completely, because I was under the either misapprehension or apprehension that you had to claim the status based on religious grounds. And because I had no religious affiliation at all, specifically said, I'm not doing this on religious grounds. I'm doing this on ethical grounds. And I felt that at least made me honest.
Right. I don't know. I just had this funny feeling thinking about this. We all thought it was an absolutely immoral act to go and do violence to people of Vietnam under these circumstances. And yet... We didn't want to like lie about getting out of it.
Well, yeah, and it's somehow acknowledging your duty to the country somehow still to not falsify your stand. Did you have to appear before the board?
I did. I had to go.
What was that?
That's interesting. See,
you guys
thought that was the model. No, I didn't even know where it was.
I did go there. I turned in my application. I got a receipt saying we've received it. We'll consider it. I got a notice saying you have to show up for an interview. And I remember going to the interview and answering the questions, and they said, we'll get back to you. And I went home and sweated bullets. And so you didn't have to go. You didn't. You never saw the board?
Was never called.
No, neither was I.
Yeah.
So you just sent in the application and...
Yeah. And then I got some sort of a notice.
So you too, Mark, you just sent it in? And
I sent it in months past.
Oh.
So I don't know how I know this, but when it met for me, I must have seen a record of some kind. Of the five members of the board, three showed up, two voted in my favor and one against. And I got the card and I was off.
what sort of fascinates me about looking back at all of this is the realization that we were put in a position where we had to think about this. And in some ways, that's a good thing. I don't think the draft was a good thing, but I think it may have been a good thing for me to have to decide I wasn't going to go.
Yeah. I think once the decision to say no, then you're forced to do a little more thinking. Because you were taking a resistance route. And more than that, you had to write it all down and explain why and rationalize it. So,
if you were inclined to. I think the deal is that the vast majority of young men in our situation didn't have the tools, background.
Well, there's that, isn't there? I mean, there's
sit and think about it and write the clever statements that we all wrote and do all of that. They assumed that when they got the call, that was it and they're off. And we had a great privilege to be able to have a hand in the outcome in a certain way. But I don't think realistically the majority of folks in our situation did.
Yeah, we all went to Oberlin. We all applied for CO. We all went to YPI.
We're not a representative group, are we?
So when you gain CO status, you then are given the right to go do alternate service. It's 2 years long.
Well, right. So the
24
idea was
months.
There were some rules about it had to be for a public service organization of some kind. You know, healthcare was always safe. And Yale Psychiatric Institute. Primary mission was to treat adolescent schizophrenics.
It's part of the Yale New Haven Hospital, a teaching hospital.
Yeah, I was very grateful to have some useful work or be of some value to a bunch of people who were clearly in need of some kind of help. It was like way better than going to Vietnam in terms of both your benefit to the world and your benefit to yourself.
When I went back and looked at my CO, when I went back and looked at some of the stuff from YPI, I think, oh, my God, this is when I became the person I am.
Yeah, there's no doubt that it's definitely a matter of identity.
You know, it was an abrupt detour in a way, and so it was a bit of like being together in an outpost. A lot of emotional content that we needed to share with each other that was coming up for the first time because we'd never seen folks in this kind of trouble.
Interestingly enough, thinking about it that way, I certainly don't have any regrets. I don't feel that I missed out on anything. And the fact that I had to do the alternate service probably did me some good, which ironically sounds like the statement that your dad made about a little discipline wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, and I should add that I found in my file a letter from my dad to the board which said, "I believe him." In many more words than that, he said, "We don't agree, but I believe him." Robert Cardineau, Mark Peterson, and I all did alternative service as conscientious objectors during the Vietnam War. We worked together as aides at the Yale Psychiatric Institute in New Haven, Connecticut. If you have comments about this hour, bring them to our Facebook page or send us an email through our website at ttbook.org.